we're working again, so. Recording is working again. As I understand the question, maybe I should ask you to explain the factual basis of the question is about additional design done by the department following the draft EIS. Is that correct, or is there something more? I need to make sure I understand what the question is about, because you hadn't.
My questions are going to be about what the department did and did not do between the decision on the preferred alternative and the publication of the final EIS and continuing until today.
Prior to the final publication of the EIS?
Prior to the publication of the final EIS, which was in May.
So how is that not part of...
There's a nuanced distinction. If Mr. Schneider is going to be asking about what the department did or didn't do up until that point,
right,
then we're comfortable with that.
Right.
Some discussion about hiring people, that's fine.
Right.
Well, again, I'm not...
And I will withdraw my objection if that's what he's saying, but I'm at the ready.
I don't know enough about the timing of when these things were done to know if the actual question that was asked goes beyond that.
The nature of our objection is, I believe, that they are pursuing information related to the advances in the design beyond what was considered in the final EIS.
Right, after the EIS.
And I think the issue here is that we believe that is outside the scope of the appeal that they've filed. That's not part of their appeal. And I don't believe it goes to deference either. I think, as Mr. Cohen has identified, we've got deference, and that is sort of an overlay over everything, but that does not give you the right to then pursue evidence supporting different challenges to the underlying EIS.
The challenge is stated in the very introduction to the appeal is that SDOT's FEIS fails to comply with the policies and requirements of SEPA and its implementing regulations.
I'm sorry, where were you referring?
It's from the first paragraph of the introduction. If
what you're doing is asking up to the EIS.
I'm sorry.
If what you're doing is asking about design up to the time of the publication of the EIS, I understand that the objection is being withdrawn and we can move forward. So is there...
I'm going to make a point with the evidence related to that, but I would also then like to continue beyond that. I'm not asking for any detail about the design. I'm not attempting to get into what the design looks like, what decisions have or have not been made. That has nothing to do with it. I'm not going to be asking those questions. But the fact that the design has advanced is relevant to several issues in this case. And I simply want to establish that fact, and it's relevant to multiple issues. And so, you know, we can deal with it now, or it might make more sense to let me deal with the stuff that hasn't been objected to, and then that may put the rest of this into perspective.
If I could respond, because I do think this is important.
I think since we're talking in the abstract, what I'd like to do is get back to the practical of how we're proceeding in the hearing, and I'm going to take your suggestion, Mr. Schneider. Let's go with what we all know is okay up to the time of when the EIS was produced. If there's questions about design that occurred after that, let's pick this back up at that time, if there are questions related to that.
Okay.
Because I don't want to – if there's no questioning around that, then we don't need to spend time I invite you and ask to reiterate the objection, and I'll watch for it, and I can call it as I think we called something else with the appellant's a standing objection as well. We know that's an issue, and so, but please remain aware of it, and we'll address that at the time.
Thank you.
Okay.
So, Mr. Result, picking up more or less where we left off, the decision as to what the preferred alternative would be was made in late February, early March. Is that accurate?
That's correct.
Okay. And the FEIS was published at the end of May?
That's right.
May 25th?
May 2017. That's right. May 25th, yes, of this year.
Okay. And so immediately after SDOT published, immediately after SDOT decided on the preferred alternative, you engaged Pertiet to complete the design of the preferred alternative, correct?
I wouldn't characterize it as immediately after. I believe it was later, probably late March, where we identified, it was late March when we looked to Pertiet to hire them to begin the formal design process for the project.
Can I confirm what year you're talking about?
2017.
Thank you.
And Pertiet is P-E-R-T-E-E-T?
That's right.
Okay. And that's a design firm that you had on contract?
That's correct. The Seattle Department of Transportation has a number of on-call contracts for various services, such as design and engineering plan set development, and Pertiet was one of those firms that we had on contract already, kind of irregardless of the Brooklyn Trail missing link.
Okay, and so you then, in late March, activated your on-call contract with Pertiet for them to finish the design of the preferred alternative?
We began discussions with them. I cannot speak to when it's called a work authorization when we hire an on-call firm to do a particular task, and I cannot speak to the date that we actually finalized the work authorization with Pertiet. But we did begin discussions with them in late March, according to my memory.
Okay. And, in fact, you did hire them to begin that work before the FEIS was published, correct?
I believe they were officially on board before we published the final EIS. That's correct.
Okay. So I want to direct your attention to one of the city seeker rules. I apologize for the way it's printed out. I did it multiple times. It would always kind of heading on one page and then the content on the second.
But this Mr. Schneider, could I get a copy?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
This is a printout of 2505070 of the city seeker regulations. Is that correct?
That's what it appears to be, yes.
Okay. And I want to direct your attention. Why don't you read for us section A1 and down through 2.
I'm going to object. Renewing my objection, there are arguments we can make about the path Mr. Schneider is pursuing. The city feels like we've got a defense to this. We don't need to because this is not part of their appeal. If they're going to use the first line of their appeal that states that we violated the Environmental Policy Act, there is nothing that's out of bounds. They can change the nature of their appeal like they are today. This is not one of the issues they've raised, and we shouldn't have this come up on day 5 of the hearing.
So what is your – I agree about the notice of appeal. That's a very broad statement. It's in the introduction. It's not identified as an issue. What is the issue that, as you're framing it?
I understand what Mr. Schneider is doing based on this regulation is that he is advancing an argument that the city has violated this regulation by doing something beyond the final environmental impacts statement or before its publication in a manner that violates CEPA. We don't agree with that, but that's, again, something we don't need to be arguing about because they did not raise this as part of their appeal.
And again, not only does this go to the deference that the city is insisting the examiner apply to the lead agency's conduct in this case, it is directly relevant to whether this EIS is compliant with CEPA's purpose, which is to inform decision makers before a decision is made, rather than cover up a decision that has already been made. That is a fundamental part of our appeal of the adequacy of this case. And finally, the facts that I'm raising could not have been known at the time we filed the appeal because we didn't learn this until discovery.
I don't have enough information to even know what these facts are to really comment on the last part is the difficulty I'm having. Because, of course, we're stopping a line of questioning before that would elucidate those facts. But you're citing that the purpose of is this deference challenge, right? Help me understand what that is in the context of this. They failed to meet a city SEPA policy. I'm with you after that. I understand that that's what your line of questioning is on at this time.
Well, Mr. Schiller, again, the evidence, I guess I have to make an offer of proof since I can't actually present the evidence for you to evaluate without these repeated objections. But the city SEPA rule is one of SEPA's foundational principles. It's been litigated in several recent appellate decisions, is whether 070 is violated by actions being taken before procedural SEPA is complied with, in this case before the publication of the final environmental impact statement. The EIS sets out reasonable alternatives. That's what they are by definition. And SDOT made its choice among those reasonable alternatives months before the FEIS was published and has been proceeding to finalize the plans for the preferred alternative, not only despite this appeal, but before the FEIS was published.
And you're offering this now as an issue that would support demonstrating that I would not owe deference to an agency with a take a step like that.
That is one foundational.
One foundational.
And it also goes to sort of the pervasive argument throughout the appeal, again, that this EIS is intended to cover up and conceal rather than disclose environmental impacts. The decision was made before the FEIS was final. And again, Your Honor, we're not dealing with a situation where it may not be notice pleading, but you also cannot be expected to identify issues that you have no way to know about until you take a deposition or do some discovery.
When did you become aware this is an issue?
When I deposed Mr. Mazzola.
And when was that?
Last month. The date of the deposition was October 25th, so I guess it's just over a month ago, and Ms. Ferguson was there.
And was any motion filed to modify or amend the notice of appeal or add an issue at that time?
No.
Or shortly thereafter?
No, but again, this is not...
So it... On that one point, I just want to make sure that we've... I've got three pieces to go through here. And on that, whether it was part of the notice of appeal, you've indicated it couldn't have been because we only found this out in deposition. And so now the city's only finding out about mid-hearing. We are on December 1st, approximately a month later, so it seems to me that the appellants had an opportunity to file a motion to amend. To bring that in as an issue.
Well,
to the degree you're making a new issue. I understand that the deference is not an issue that you would raise a new issue in, but...
If I could just disagree with one way in which you've laid out the issue, the city was aware. The city's attorney was there in the room.
That you would be raising this as an issue in the
hearing? Well, that it is an issue factually.
Well, they may be aware of all kinds of things they did wrong.
all I'm saying is there shouldn't be any surprise that we would be concerned about this issue since it's so fundamental to SEPA. And again, I'm raising it. I'm not asking you to make a separate issue. I'm raising it in the context of no deference is allowed to an agency that does things.
Okay, so that goes to the other basis for what you're saying, and I'm I'm preserving that for the moment because we haven't finished argument on it. But I will at least indicate as a new issue that that should have been raised in a motion to amend the notice of appeal or something along those lines. So I won't allow it as a new issue here and now in the hearing, simply because they were present in the deposition. Again, they may be aware of any number of problems, but it is the responsibility of the appellant to bring notice as to both for the hearing examiner and for the appellants as to what issues they need to be prepared to address at the hearing. Let's move on to the deference, and I'm not sure if we still have a second. There were three items that we've been discussing.
I don't remember.
You gave me three bases for this. I'm forgetting what one of them was.
I can be helpful.
Please.
I believe in the first line of the notice of appeal, the final EIS violated CEPA.
That's the same issue.
I see.
If I'm not mistaken, unless there were two combined issues. So to the degree there was another issue, it sounds like we don't have to address it because no counsel is able to tell me that there is. So that we remain with the issue of whether this can be raised in the context of showing that the department has not adequately met the requirements under CEPA in the context of I don't know how to frame this, but it's in the deference.
Well, it in all honesty, Your Honor, it never occurred to me to even think I needed to review the notice of appeal to see whether this was in the scope of an issue, and so I haven't done so.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Brower has been trying to do it furiously while we've been sitting here, but I haven't looked over the notice of appeal because, to me, this was so fundamental to this case that it never occurred to me that it had to be a separate issue, and that was just confirmed when we got the pre-hearing brief arguing deference. I think I'm entitled to present the facts as they happened that show how the lead agency went about its business here.
Your Honor, I would argue that deference is a standard of review issue. It's not a substantive claim that the EIS is defective. It's how do you look at how do you look at the pattern of the city's behavior?
And I think that's actually what they're saying. What they're trying to demonstrate is a pattern of behavior.
Mr. Examiner, may I read a bullet point from the eighth page of our notice of appeal, which I believe will resolve.
What page?
Eighth page.
And which bullet point?
The fifth full bullet point.
Yes.
The FEIS is incomplete and inadequate because SDOT is using an ongoing process occurring after the EIS was issued.
I thought I had turned right to your notice of appeal. Was there an amended one filed?
It was corrected, yes.
Ah.
Sorry about that.
Do you know what date that was filed on?
I do. I believe it was filed on
8th of June.
8th of June. Mm-hmm. It was timely filed.
Mm-hmm. All right, just go ahead and read what you've got.
Really, it's the subpart B in that paragraph. Further design, preferred alternative with 30%, 60%, 90%, and 100%, which further design should have been performed before and included in the draft and FEIS. I can read the whole paragraph out loud if you...
That would help be more helpful to give me context.
The FEIS is incomplete and inadequate because SDOT is using an ongoing process occurring after the FEIS was issued. It's Design Advisory Committee, DAC, to A, conduct public outreach to impacted and affected businesses and property owners along the preferred alternative routes to obtain information that should have been included in the draft and FEIS. B, further design the preferred alternative to 30%, 60%, 90%, and 100%, which further design should have been performed before and included in the draft and FEIS. and C, evaluate whether a multi-use trail as the preferred alternative can be designed to operate safely in the selected location, which evaluation information should have been included in the draft and FEIS.
And if I might respond, Mr. Chairman, in our motion to dismiss, we specifically moved to dismiss discussion of this precise issue, and in their response, they conceded that was not properly part of the scope of the appeal.
Just the DAC. The issue of when the design occurred, I don't think that was conceded.
Well, I would add I defer.
So parties have a dispute as to what was said in the... Was there anything...
Motions were months ago. I mean, I don't have them in front of me. You currently do.
Subsection... We do, and subsection B is not saying that it was improperly done. It's saying that you, this is more of your argument about how much design is required to be done in advance of the draft EIS. It's the same argument we've been talking about. What you're raising now is different. You're pointing to a different part of the statute and a different part of the code and making a different legal argument. This is different fundamentally, and this is not...
Procedural compliance with SEPA is always part of a SEPA appeal. It's been part of this appeal since 2008.
When it's raised in a notice of appeal, I'd agree with you. That's not what that paragraph raises.
In the interest of time, what I would like to do is to proceed to allow the line of questioning for purposes of appeal for you to preserve this for the record.
I just cite one other rule, which is your rule, actually. Hearing Examiner Rule 3.05, it says we would have had to amend this appeal note later than 10 days after the date on which it was filed. So we would have had to bring a motion to do that, and 100% sure the city would have said you're way too late to do it because you had to do it 10 days after it filed, which would have been June 18th, not November something.
All right. Well, you did have a month for that, so I'm going to stay with my ruling on that. But I'm going to allow you to proceed with the line of questioning for preserving it for appeal. So you can create the record around it.
Well, does that mean that you're not going to treat it as evidence for purposes of the deference issue?
What I'll do with that, honestly, is I have to leave that for closing argument for the parties to evaluate this. I'm not getting clear argument from both sides on this, and so I don't have enough information on what we're arguing about facts before I get them.
Yes.
And we continue to do that. And I can't evaluate those facts until I have them. So, since it wasn't in the notice of appeal, it could have been included. I know I've dismissed it on that. It's not a separate issue for purposes of appeal then, so we don't need to preserve it for that. The question of whether I owe deference for the city is something that we can preserve it in the record for.
And I apologize, I'm still not clear in my mind about...
In this record for, so I can consider it for that purpose.
Okay.
I do need to preserve, though, because I honestly, again, I don't know what it is, that the opportunity for the city to object to that in their closing briefing so that additional argument can come in at the end on this. I'm not clear on it at 3 o'clock, honestly, at the fifth day of the hearing. And I'm, to your credit, you've done everything you can with it, I think, in this moment, but I'm not getting clear argument either from both sides on this. Missing facts, and I think you're both doing the best you can with it to inform me, but I'm not sure that I'm getting everything I could, for example, that I could get in actual briefing as to the standard of what's owed to these facts in the context of the deference I owe to the city. And so I will allow the city to renew its objection essentially to this in the closing. So it's not, I'm essentially not ruling on your objection. I'm deferring my ruling on it to you having an opportunity to argue it in closing.
Okay. And for purposes,
we have to move on to it, and we could keep discussing it until I get the information from you. But it's going to take too long, and we'll have. have wasted our opportunity to finish with a witness today.
And just to confirm, I'm clear with the ground rules. Is it appropriate to treat this as a standing objection as this goes on, so I don't have to keep renewing this, and we'll address it in the closing briefing, as I
yes.
how I understood your ruling.
Yes,
okay,
yes. It's not. Yeah, I have not ruled on it, so it's a standing objection on that item.
Okay.
That I'll expect I don't expect it, but the parties have the opportunity to provide additional briefing on the allowance of this evidence in the context of the deference in your closing briefing, and I will allow it to proceed under two purposes. For that argument within the context of this hearing, and to preserve it for appeal in the record, which, you know, at that point, however I rule on the objection, a judge can decide on. But it'll at least be in the record for that to be considered as part of the review if a judge disagrees with me.
And one last clarification, I appreciate if you indulge this question. I would intend, if Mr. Schneider is going to pursue questions on this, that the city may have questions on redirect addressing this issue as well. I would do so for purposes of a complete record, but would not be waiving our objection to the subject matter.
Fully agreed. Absolutely.
Thank you.
We'll try once again, Mr. Mazzola. So the city, SDOT, engaged Pertit to finalize the design of the preferred alternative before the FEIS was published on May 25th, correct?
The city engaged Pertit to begin work on the final design prior to the final EIS being published this year. That's correct.
And Mr. Schultheis, who we heard from, is he his firm a subcontractor then to Pertit?
My understanding is that tool design is part of the Pertit on-call team. That's correct.
Okay. So again, I think you were interrupted when I had asked you to read the rules. So why don't we get 070 in the record? If you could read section A1 and 2.
Sure, and so not the other subsequent sections that I'll sort of roll up into this.
Well, we'll get to one of the others in a moment.
Okay.
Now just get A1 and 2.
Okay, sure. So beginning at A, until the responsible official issues a final determination of non-significance or final environmental impact statement, no action concerning the proposal shall be taken by a government agency that would, one, have an adverse environmental impact, or two, limit the choice of reasonable alternatives.
Okay, and so by choosing to proceed with the design of the preferred alternative, didn't you limit city decision makers' ability to choose among the reasonable alternatives after the FEIS was published?
No, we did not. And I would like to explain, if I may. So first of all, to bring your attention to subsection D, where it states here that this section does not preclude developing plans or designs, and that's exactly what we were doing. And so we recognize that embarking on the final design process for the preferred alternative comes with some level of financial risk and time to the city, because it is always within the right of our decision makers to change their minds. And so that's a risk that we often are willing to accept for many of our projects, especially the bulk of our projects fall within the level of environmental review appropriate for CEPA checklist, and then subsequently a determination of non-significance. And within those projects, by the time we are doing our environmental review, typically we already have the designer, the consultant design team on board, and are working to design that project. I'd say that in this case with the missing link, it's atypical for the department, because we truly did not know the preferred alternative until after we published the final EIS. Or excuse me, I misspoke. We did not know the preferred alternative until after we published the draft EIS and went through the process as I've testified, or as we talked about before.
Mr. Pizzola, since the FEIS was published, no action as defined in SEPA has taken place, correct?
I'd say no formal decision, as I would say, is contemplated here in Section A1 or 2, has been taken by the department. That's correct.
Okay. And, in fact, you treated the choice of the preferred alternative as the city's decision to proceed with the project, correct?
So I guess I'd like to – I'm having a hard time answering because there's many decisions that the department has made over the years to move forward with this project. And I apologize if I'm not hearing your question or if I lost the meaning of it. But
well, I'll come back to it in a moment.
Sure.
Let's assume, for example, that the new mayor wants to take a look at this issue and decide whether to proceed with the preferred alternative or not.
Correct.
How much money will she discover that the city has already invested in the preferred alternative?
Into the preferred alternative or into this project over the years, into the design of the preferred alternative? I cannot answer because I am not tracking that budget, and I don't know how much money we have spent to date on developing that design.
Well, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars, right?
I can speculate, presumably, yeah.
And you heard Mr. Phillips' testimony about, I think he said, 250 to 350 to advance the designs just from 10% to 30%?
Yeah, I apologize. I don't recall that testimony.
And so what level are the designs at now?
Well, we've heard here during this hearing that they're approximately at 10%. So rather than argue, I will say that they are at approximately
10%. No, I'm asking where they are.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was thinking with the draft EIS. They're at 90%. Design right now.
So, did you see the Seattle Times article about this case?
Objection, Mr. Examiner. We're now talking about press coverage about this case.
That was a foundational question. I can skip it.
Okay.
It's been reported.
It's withdrawn.
It's withdrawn. If he's skipping it.
I'm sorry?
Did I understand you were withdrawing the question?
Yes, I'm asking another question. So has SDOT spent, not counting the work, whatever money it's spent on taking the preferred alternative to 90%, has SDOT spent $4.8 million on design work for missing link routes that have been scrapped?
That sounds correct to me, that if what you're referring to is the money that the department spent basically on what, if you allow me to call the original Burke-Gilman Trail Missing Link project prior to hearing Examiner Watanabe's decision, remand to the department to conduct an EIS. So that's my understanding of roughly of what had been spent on that earlier iteration of the project.
Okay. And so that $4.8 million was spent on projects that, on design work that was done before the CEPA review was completed, correct?
So I would say that it's money spent on design and other work the department did related to the project. Prior to the appeal, I guess, of this project being resolved.
Right. So because Judge Rogers and Hearing Examiner Watanabe disagreed with the SEPA determinations, that $4.8 million was wasted.
I would not characterize it as wasted. I don't feel that's my place to do so one way or the other.
Well, you took the 90% plans, for example, for the portions of the missing link outside the Shilshil segment and basically scrapped them and went back to 10%, didn't you?
I'm going to object again on different grounds. Now we're digging into the past history and the cost of the past history. I'm quite frankly not sure how this is at all relevant to the adequacy of the EIS. I understand they pursued a lot of different theories in their deposition of Mr. Mazzola. The fact that they pursued those in the scope of discovery, they're allowed to. In the context of this proceeding, we're supposed to be dealing with relevant evidence to the issues they've raised in appeal, and I feel this is wide-ranging and irrelevant to the adequacy of the document that's in front of the examiner.
And I think we're having the same debate we had earlier about whether deference is owed to this lead agency for its CEPA review of this project, which has been ongoing for 10 years now and has been repeatedly found invalid by the courts or by the hearing examiner.
I guess I don't see how what the department spent or how they've utilized designs gets at that.
The fact that they are willing to spend millions of dollars before the CEPA review is final certainly can be construed as evidence that it is trying to preclude any decision maker from making a reasonable, neutral decision after the environmental review is complete because of the city investment that will be wasted if someone makes a different decision.
And if I may, Mr. Schneider, I think just miscarried.
So I just want to make sure that does – I'll hear what you've got to say, but I just want to make sure that does not get to the question of deference owed, if that's the argument line, what you just said. I don't see how this gets to the question of deference that would be owed if that's the basis for the line of questioning. And B, I don't think that that's what you just said. So am I correct that that is not what you're pursuing with this line of questioning?
No, I believe it is related to deference because of the actions that are taken before environmental review is complete. The whole purpose of CEPA is to inform decision makers once the environmental review is complete. And actions have been taken here. Public money is invested before the FEIS is final, and in the earlier cases, before the DNS was final because they were subject to appeal and never became final.
You had something to add, Mr. Casillas.
I do not believe that this is relevant to deference. I believe that what Mr. Schneider is doing is trying to put a spin on past facts that try to cast SDOT in a bad light. And again, we disagree with the theories he's pursuing, but that is irrelevant to the scope of the appeal or to the deference that the examiner is supposed to give.
I think we've already had this argument, and I profoundly disagree that this is not relevant to the issue of deference. Whether the lead agency repeatedly takes action before its environmental review is done because it's both the project proponent.
But that wasn't the line of questioning you were just on. The question you were asking them is whether they had utilized designs or not and how much money they had spent.
Before the environmental review was complete.
It went to how much money they'd wasted.
Right.
Which is utterly irrelevant to the legitimacy of this EIS.
So I'm going to sustain the objection with regard to that line of questioning.
And I'm sorry, just so I don't trespass to the line of questioning about the amount of money?
And whether it was wasted or not.
Am I correct, Mr. Mazzola, in stating that you're not aware of anyone in the city having read the FEIS since it was published?
I don't think that's a fair characterization.
Are you aware of anyone reading it since your deposition was taken?
since my deposition. So I know you asked me this question during my deposition. I said, and I don't recall exactly if you were asking me about specific.
So, Mr. Mazzola, I just want to clarify the question to you was after the deposition, so you don't need to repeat what you said at that time.
I apologize. I'm sorry, Mr. Snyder, can you repeat your question?
Yeah. We can go back to your deposition transcript if we need to, but right now my question is, are you aware of anyone having read it since your deposition was taken?
I think besides myself and some of my other team members that work for the city, I'm not aware whether or not other folks at the city have read the final EIS since my deposition.
Okay, and again, excluding your circle,
that's
responsible for it.
I have a big circle.
You weren't aware of anyone at the time of your deposition having read it either, correct?
Well, so you can see my struggle. I don't want to be inconsistent with what I said at the deposition, of course. What I would say is that I don't know the extent to which folks at the city have read the EIS since it was published. I know I've gotten questions about it and asked to help look things up. Folks from the city or the department have asked me for references of where they can find particular information. So I don't recall the extent, or I cannot say the extent to which folks from the city have read the final EIS.
Okay, so questions from whom and when did you get them?
Questions from our project manager, Luisa Galassini, questions from other folks on the design team. That's what I can recall at this point.
Okay, so isn't it fair that, as far as you're concerned, the decision to proceed with the preferred alternative was made when you chose the preferred alternative?
I want to make sure I understand your question. You asked, is it fair to say that the decision to proceed with the preferred alternative was made before the final EIS was published?
No.
I'm sorry.
No. The question now is, isn't it correct that your understanding was that the city decision to proceed with the project was the choice of the preferred alternative?
So I don't think that's a fair characterization either. When you say the city's decision to proceed with the project, one could argue that it was made in the early 2000s when we first started our endeavor to complete the Bird Gilman Trail Missing Link.
Well, yes, one could, but right now I'm focusing on the decision to proceed with the project as set forth in the preferred alternative.
So, I'm sorry, could you repeat that question then? If I could paraphrase to make sure I'm clear on your question. You're asking, it was the city's decision to proceed with the project once we identified the preferred alternative?
Yeah, and I'm being specific now to your understanding. Your understanding that the choice of the preferred alternative was the same thing as the decision to proceed with that alternative.
So I don't think those two items are the same thing. So making a decision to proceed with the project versus the preferred alternative with which to proceed with are two separate issues. So
when and by whom is the future decision going to be made about whether to proceed with an alternative?
So right now, you know, as we've, as the city has announced and as we've stated in the final EIS, the department's intent is to move forward with the preferred alternative. As I mentioned before, the department's made a decision to proceed with the project the project being defined as completing the Burke-Gilman Trail Missing Link a long time ago. And always with the understanding that, you know, no formal agency action as Section 070A, 1 and 2 refer to has yet been taken by the city.
And my question is, who is going to take that action?
So the Seattle Department of Transportation will take that action.
Okay, but hasn't Mr. Kubley already blessed the preferred alternative and approved the investment in the final design of the preferred alternative?
So, as I mentioned, yeah, our intent is to move forward with the preferred alternative. So, and as I've mentioned before, you know, decisions are made about this project, as many of our projects, every day. And so the decision was made to move forward with the design process and advance the project design to gear the department up in order to bid the project out eventually once the hearing here is settled.
So is what you're saying then, let's assume Mr. Kubley retains his position as department mm-hmm. director, that having made the decision before May 25th to invest in the final design of the preferred alternative, he's going to make another decision whether to do that or not, whether to proceed with that project at some point in the future?
That's correct. And to be honest, I don't know who, if I may back up. We go through a contract award process that involves not only the Seattle Department of Transportation, but another department within the city. The acronym is CPCS, I want to say, and I'm blanking on what exactly that stands for, but it's our contracts folks. So at a city level, they review our contract documents and approve them, and this is standard for any of our capital projects that we deliver. And so the project would go through that bidding or advertisement approval process before it goes out to bid for a contractor. So there's that decision-making process that the city goes through. There's that decision-making process that the city will go through as part of this project once we've completed the environmental review process, which I understand at this hearing we are still in the middle of.
Well, Mr. Kubley doesn't participate in the review of the contract documents, does he?
I can't say one way or the other.
Well, again, you said that Mr. Kubley or SDOT would make a future decision about among the choice of reasonable alternatives in mm-hmm. EIS. And my understanding was that would be Mr. Kubley. Did I misunderstand? Assuming he's still the director.
Right. So I'm sorry, I'm not quite following your question.
What I'm struggling with is how there hasn't been a choice among reasonable alternatives. If a decision to be made in the future is going to be a decision whether to proceed with a project in which a great deal of money has already been invested mm-hmm. or choose another alternative.
Okay, so I think the first part of your question mentioned or implied that a decision has not yet been made on a preferred alternative, but
I'm asking whether the decision that is referred to in 070 mm-hmm. about limiting the choice of reasonable alternatives has been made, whether an action has been taken within the meaning of SEPA since the FEIS was published. And I think you said, if you want me to shut up so you can respond, you say so.
That's okay.
That there would be a future action by Mr. Cooper.
Okay, so if I may have misspoken, I don't remember the context in which I would have, in which I said that, but I can say that the department has not made any decision that would limit the choice of reasonable alternatives.
So can we turn to the FEIS,
sure.
please, which is exhibit
R1?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And specifically to FS3, which is very near the beginning. FS Roman numeral 3, which is part of the fact sheet.
Yep.
So,
FS-1.
Is that FS-3?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
And I want to direct your attention to the last paragraph, environmental review. And would you read the last two sentences for us?
Sure. Final design and permitting are expected to be completed by early 2018, with construction beginning shortly thereafter. The project is anticipated to be complete by 2019.
So if construction is expected to begin shortly after early 2018,
mm-hmm.
how is it that no decision has been made whether to proceed with the project or not? How could construction possibly begin a few months from now if the decision to finalize the design hadn't been made already?
So as I've mentioned before, we make lots of decisions about this project. Our intent is to construct the project, and so we have been proceeding with that intent. We have not done anything that I would interpret as an official action, as again citing back to 070A 1 or 2.
Even though you expect construction to begin in a few months from now?
So that was our expectation when we published the final EIS, that is typical to include some sort of projection about when the project design would be finished and construction would begin and end, because that is often a question that we get from the public. They, depending on the interest, folks really want to understand, especially on this project, since it has been such a long time coming. Folks want to know when kind of the soonest it could begin construction, and then how quickly it would take to actually build the project.
Go ahead.
That's all. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take a break there. We'll come back at 3:15.
Okay, great.